Welcome back for the third hour of Issues Etc. today. David Van Bima joins us for the first 20 minutes or so, and then we'll open lines to talk about this list in Time Magazine of the 25 most influential evangelicals in America. We're going to be talking about some of them here with David. My question for you during that last bit of open lines, who was left out of this list, if anyone, in Time Magazine's most influential evangelicals? David Van Bima is senior writer for Time Magazine and author of this cover story, The 25 Most Influential Evangelicals. David, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks so much.
David, how did you assemble this list of 25?
Well, I would have to say it was enlightened improvisation. We've reported on individual people, individual influential people in evangelicalism forever. And so we have a whole list of people we rely on as sources and people who are authorities within various movements within evangelicalism in colleges, in the pews, in think tanks, and we tapped all of them in a fairly short amount of time. So this is not the result of some nationwide poll, but I think it does reflect some fairly heavy duty expertise.
Now, not all the individuals on this list are strictly speaking evangelicals. There are a couple of Roman Catholics in there as well.
That's correct. We thought that somebody like people like Senator Rick Santorum or Richard John Newhouse of First Things were so important to the evangelical causes and so influential that they needed to be on the list.
And how many? I noticed that the top two, at least according to the story, are the Grahams, Billy Graham, Franklin Graham, and then also Pastor Rick Warren from Saddleback in California. These are ordained ministers. How many in the list were actually formerly ministers in evangelicalism?
I can't really answer that. As a matter of fact, we never did a breakdown. I should tell you that we did not number them, so we can't really talk about the top two. That is a good question. I'm just looking this over.
Well, then I'm just curious about that.
As fast as I can, and I would say that that it comes to something like a quarter or something below there. Not as many ministers as one think.
Just curious then, if you didn't rank them, why is Warren up first and kind of emblematic of this whole thing, Rick Warren?
I think that to be brutally honest here, I think that we were looking for somebody who could truly be said to be extremely influential and extremely popular, and yet not be a face that everybody was totally familiar with, especially thinking about our readership that is not conservative Christians. So it was not an intention of saying that he was number one, but these other things went into it. I do not think have led off with the most obscure person on the list, but nor did we want to lead off with an image that everybody was already very well familiar with.
Well, then let's talk about a few of these in particular, beginning with Rick Warren. Where does his influence lie?
Well, he has multiple influences. He, because of the purpose-driven books, he has an extraordinary reach. I think it's probably safe to say beyond the evangelical world, but certainly an almost total reach within that world, and he also, because of Saddleback and his megachurch there, is regarded as a role model for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pastors all over the country. So he reaches in several different directions, and when he appeared at at one of Billy Graham's crusades, he just got a tremendous round of applause, which suggests, and that really fits neither of the two categories I've just suggested. So he is extending in all directions.
What about Billy Graham and the heir apparent to Billy's efforts over the last half century, his son Franklin?
I think that we wanted to make that point with Billy and Franklin that Billy's style, at least in the last few decades, is not really the same as Franklin's style. Franklin has a much more sort of combative jump on the hot button kind of style that Billy's style over the last few decades anyway in some ways is sort of closer to Warren's we didn't want to suggest that that Franklin was not the rightful heir to the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, but merely that, to some extent, in terms of tone at this point, he's very different from his dad.
Dr. James Dobson is also with probably, if you had to have name recognition attached to this, one of the most recognized names on this list. And where does his influence seem to be felt most?
Well, his influence is felt on the switchboards of Capitol Hill. I mean, it's felt in many, many ways. It's felt through his, I mean, the immediate source is what has been his radio program, but he's extended, he's actually stepped down from the presidency of Focus on the Family, although I think he maintains his chairmanship, in order to be able to be more political. He's very much out front these days in terms of telling people, telling Democratic senators that if they filibuster pro-life court nominations, that he's going to target them. He's really moving further and further out of the cultural sphere, or not so much out of the cultural sphere, as moving further and further and further and further and further into the political sphere. Some people may applaud that, some people may not.
Kind of the flip side of that Dobson coin is someone you mentioned before, Father Richard John Newhouse. He is a Roman Catholic priest, a Lutheran-turned-Roman Catholic priest. Tell us about his influence.
Well, it was really fascinating. There was, President Bush gave an interview with religious journalists, not religion journalists, but religious journalists, although they're also religion journalists, of course, last year, which is another way of saying I wasn't there, but that it was for people specifically denominational interests. The living person that he referred to most as sort of as a tutor was not an evangelical and not a Protestant. It was Newhouse, who edits First Things, which is a cultural and policy and theology journal that attempts to try to, in some ways, pull together conservative thought from different traditions, from Catholic and Protestant traditions. And what we say in the story is that beyond advising Bush on issues like stem cells and abortion and gay marriage, that Newhouse also takes the vocabulary that Bush and Bush's evangelical advisors may be familiar with, which is a vocabulary of argument that where the proof text is basically biblical, and is able to translate it into a vocabulary of Catholic moral reasoning, which doesn't where the biblical quote where it's not enough to merely cite scripture, and you have to make your argument in terms beyond that, which is in some ways much more attractive to the non-evangelical voter. So he's really helping translate in some ways a Protestant discourse into a wider discourse for Bush.
Father Newhouse is a regular guest on this program, along with another person that I've noticed on the list, and that is Diane Nippers. Tell us about her influence.
Well, I mean, we talked about all kinds of things that the Institute on Religion and Democracy is doing. The one that it fascinates me the most is the support that it gives to conservatives in mainline churches. We talk about the way that it has helped advise the administration on the Sudan and on various other topics. So we basically suggest that this is a think tank with firepower, an up-and-coming force in Washington.
We're talking with David Van Bima, senior writer for Time magazine and author of the cover story of the latest Time, The 25 Most Influential Evangelicals. In about 15 minutes, we're going to be opening phone lines for your questions and your comments at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. The question for you, if you've seen this list, 25 most influential evangelicals, or heard our conversation here with David Van Bima, who is missing, do you think, from the list? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. T.D. Jakes is perhaps one of the least likely here, not because of his influence, it seems, but because he's kind of out of the mainstream of where we find the rest of these influential evangelicals. Tell us about Bishop Jakes.
Well, Bishop Jakes, it depends on how you define the mainstream. If you're talking about conservative Christians who have a big footprint, as it were, he certainly fills that bill. He's sort of it occurred to me at a certain point that everybody on this list is like a hyphenate. You know, nobody's just a pastor. Nobody just has a radio ministry. Everybody is like a pastor with a radio ministry and this and that and the other thing. But he's like a hyphenate. You know, he's got it all. Plus he does. He's done a movie that cracked the top 10. He's got Grammy Awards. He's different. Both he and, Joyce Meyer are more from the Pentecostal side of things. And so they differ, from that point of view. Because he comes from a oneness tradition, Jakes also differs yet another step theologically from a lot of other conservative Christians. But we certainly felt that he belonged on the list.
Joyce Meyer, of course, is well known to people here in the St. Louis area because her international ministry is based here in the St. Louis area. For those who are unfamiliar with her, tell us about it.
Well, in some ways, she resembles Jakes in that she's willing to talk about, you know, personal history and to make that the center of her message, which he's also extremely well known for. She perhaps more so than he is would fit into get closer to a classic prosperity gospel sort of approach, which has led to all kinds of criticism from amongst, you know, the Post-Dispatch being right up there. With regard to where the funds for her home and a jet come from that she owns, and she's, you know, there's been suggestion that the IRS should look into her, and she told us that basically she would, you know, welcome, or her representatives told us she would welcome that kind of investigation, and she's extraordinarily popular.
Let's talk also about Tim and Beverly LaHaye, husband and wife team among the most influential evangelicals.
Well, Tim LaHaye is fascinating because, you know, when F. Scott Fitzgerald said no second acts in American life, he was not thinking about Tim LaHaye. Tim LaHaye first became known, maybe not as well known as Beverly, for his political activism and for sort of creating the model for in Texas for what Jerry Falwell then turned into the moral majority. And then X number of decades later, he had the brainstorm of doing a fictionalized version of his interpretation of the Book of Revelation. And we all know where that led. So he's really been, he might not have been on the list were it not for that second act.
And why is Jay Sekulow, he's a lawyer, of course, with the ACLJ, the American Center for Law and Justice, why is he on the list?
He's on the list because he represents, I think, an aspect of political or policy-oriented conservative Christianity in terms of distrust of judicial activism and hopes for a more conservative judiciary, and he's argued successfully before the Supreme Court. So he struck us as a fine representative of that part of what was going on.
I noticed that Bill Hybels is there. He has often been paired with the likes of Rick Warren from Saddleback. There was a time when his large church near Chicago, Willow Creek, was all the rage. Has Hybels' influence diminished while Warren's has grown?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that. I mean, I think that Hybels, first of all, Warren's is kind of more the purpose-driven phenomenon is sort of more recent. And Hybels work with with religious seekers and the church model to serve them has been around for a little while. I also think that Hybels was more associated with Democrats, and one Democrat in particular being he was one of the people who canceled Bill Clinton, and we now have a Republican in the Oval Office. So I would say that he's become perhaps less influential, but remains tremendously influential in terms of his innovations at Willow Creek and the way that pastors still look to him to try to figure out what they should do.
David, two final questions. One of the names that I did not notice on the list, but this is kind of my personal take on where things are going, Joel Osteen, who's pastor of the largest megachurch in the United States in Houston, Texas. We're talking about 30,000 members thereabouts, and just bought the Compaq Center and doing a $70 million renovation of that former sports arena to relocate Lakewood City Church in Houston, Texas. Do you see some an up-and-coming influential evangelical there?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if there were a number 26, he would be it.
And anyone we haven't talked about here in our time together that you think is significant?
Well, I personally am fascinated by Doug Coe, who's the head of the Fellowship Foundation, which is the which sort of by one degree of separation is the sponsor of the National Prayer Breakfast tomorrow, I find Coe fascinating as by now a couple of generations of journalists have. Both because I believe that the Fellowship does have tremendous influence in terms of the national and the popularity in various branches of government of spin-offs of its prayer and conversation groups, and the international contacts made through those and through the prayer breakfast. And he, you know, I mean, when you talk about a group of Christians who may have had a backdoor role in the Camp David agreements between Israel and Egypt, you're really talking about tremendous influence, at least at that point in time, and I think there still is influence, and yet I think that he's a controversial figure in the evangelical world because he just chooses not to stress Jesus' divinity, but to talk mostly about his teachings, which enables him to pray with all kinds of people who are not Christian. So that the combination of high influence, Christian, apparent Christian identification, and yet theological issues made him fascinating to me.
David Van Bima is senior writer for Time magazine. You can read the latest cover story he has authored, The 25 Most Influential Evangelicals, on the web at time.com, time.com. David, thanks again for being our guest. It's always a pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you.
All right. For the remainder of this hour and all the way up until this break and after, I have a question for you based upon our conversation there with David Van Bima of Time magazine. You've seen the 25 most influential evangelical list from Time magazine, or perhaps you only heard about it. Just talk about it. They did not rank them in Time magazine. How would you rank them? Just top three of all these that are listed in the story of Rick Warren, Bill Hybels, who else is in there? The Grahams, both father and son, Richard John Newhouse, who could forget James Dobson, Diane Nippers is in there, Michael Gerson, that was one we didn't talk about, he's the chief speechwriter for the president, and he's an evangelical. And one might say, tonight we're going to have an example, perhaps, of Michael Gerson at work, and, well, you know, the speechwriters don't often get the credit until after they leave the administration, but if you hear a marvelous State of the Union address or an inaugural address, or all of those things probably coming from the pen of someone like Michael Gerson. All right. How would you rank them? T.D. Jakes. Now, you can say influence for good or for ill when you're talking about T.D. Jakes, can't you? Does influential necessarily mean someone who's having a good influence on America out of the realm of evangelicalism? Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Are you surprised that Joyce Meyer made the list? Most of us think about her as kind of a hometown girl, although, of course, she isn't. The scope of her ministry is international. I was very gratified to see a number of Issues Etc. regular guests on the list. Father Richard John Newhouse of course. I think it would have been the list wouldn't have been complete without him there, and I'm glad to see that David was astute enough to pick up on that. Diane Nippers as well. Who is missing from this list, if anyone, among the 25 most influential evangelicals? And, of course, we'll use that term evangelical for this last 25 minutes in the same way that David is using it in Time magazine. Not necessarily theological evangelicals, because, of course, we've got two in there, Rick Santorum and Father Newhouse, at least, who are not, strictly speaking, evangelicals. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Chuck Colson's in there, but, you know, someone might argue his influence has waned. Bill Hybels is in there, but Rick Warren gets the big picture. Bill Hybels gets the little picture. Because, as David pointed out in our conversation, while one star rises, another one wanes. Is someone missing from this list in Time magazine? Do you consider this really the list of the most influential evangelicals? Or are the most influential the most unsung? These are certainly the most famous, the ones that often make the most noise. You know someone I'd like to see on that list? I'll tell you right off the bat. Another regular guest on the program, Dr. Albert Mohler. I would love to have seen him on the list. Do you know how often this guy gets quoted? I'm wondering why Dr. Gene Edward Veith was not on the list. To be quite honest, not just because he's a brilliant man and a friend, but because he has influence through World Magazine and his culture, as culture editor there, that is pretty substantial. Before we go to this break, let's go to the phones. Rick is calling from his car. Rick, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks, Pastor Wilkins. I'd say N.T. Wright out of England.
Now, is he still alive?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bishop N.T. Wright's still alive. In fact, he just did a conference down in Louisiana this past month.
And why so? Explain for our listeners why you think he should be on the list.
He's done a lot of great writings on St. Paul. And he's done a lot of writings opposing the postmodern evangelical that has crept into the church.
All right, good reasoning there, Rick. Thank you very much. Okay, so Rick's got someone he'd like to add to the list of 25 most influential evangelicals. Now, that's someone out of Great Britain, but that's fine. The influence comes across the water pretty easily. Roy is calling from his car. Roy, welcome.
Hi, Pastor Wilkins.
Hi, Roy.
I just asked Jeff. I'm surprised that Hank Hanegraaff wasn't on there.
Why so?
Well, just because the Bible Answer Man and Christian Research Journal, you have a lot of guests I know that write articles for that publication. I mean, he's not political.
No, he isn't.
But he's, I guess, apologist, not necessarily have as wide a range of influence as some of the others, like a Chuck Colson or someone like that.
You know, so I'm glad you brought that up because, right, if you just look at listenership,
right,
Hank Hanegraaff can't be ignored.
No.
Thank you very much, Roy. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Of course, I asked the question near the end of that interview about Joel Osteen, and maybe next year he'll be on the list. David said if there were a 26th, he'd be the 26th. A rising star. Anybody missing from this list? How would you rank them? Would you say Rick Warren is the most influential at this point? And is it influence for good or for ill? If you had to make a first choice of influential evangelicals in America, who would it be? I want your answer to that question right after this break. Open lines follow.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
What's the relationship between the Oprah Winfrey Show and Pop American Christianity? How have psychology, emotionalism, and feminism left the church unmanned? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. I've written an article for the Next Issues Etc. journal titled Church is for Girls. And you can get a free complimentary copy of the Next Issues Etc. journal by calling our resource line 1-800-737-0172. Plus, Pastor Tim Pauls has written an article titled The Problem of Pietism. Should subjective feelings trump objective truth? Find out with the Next Issues Etc. journal 1-800-737-0172. The Wittenberg Trail feature details how Vicar Stephen Parks came to a Christ-centered understanding of baptism and the Lord's Supper. 1-800-737-0172. If you enjoy Issues Etc., the radio show, you need to get the Issues Etc. journal. 1-800-737-0172.
The Bible. Can we prove its truth? Answers with Ken Ham, whose ministry is building a major teaching center, the Creation Museum, near Cincinnati, Ohio. Well, Ken, I've always understood that a Christian has to accept God's word by faith. Is it right, though, to say we can't prove the Bible?
Well, yes, it is right, in the sense that scientifically we can't prove anything ultimately in relation to the past. But it's important for people to understand that Christians don't have a blind faith acceptance of God's word. You see, if the Bible's history concerning creation, the fall, Noah's flood, and the Tower of Babel are true, then this history should explain what we observe in the world around us. And it does, of course. For example, a flood makes sense of the fossils all over the earth. The Tower of Babel enables us to understand why there are different people groups who've descended from one man, Adam. And the fall of Adam and Eve makes sense of why there's death and suffering in this world. Not only this, but observational science confirms such interpretations. For example, the Human Genome Project found that from the study of genetics, all humans belong to one race, just as the Bible teaches. We can't prove the Bible's true, but we can confirm its truth using observational science. Christianity is not a blind faith. It's a logical and defensible faith.
Ken Ham's newest booklet tackles the controversial topic of gay marriage. Next time you're in front of your computer, go to our popular website, AnswersRadio.com. That's AnswersRadio.com.
Have you noticed how Sunday morning church has become more like the Oprah Winfrey Show? Pews filled with mostly women, music focused on subjective feelings rather than objective truths, preaching that sounds more like therapy than theology, and pastors who are afraid to take a stand. Is there still a place for real men in the church? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to visit Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. For more information, check out their website, www.ctsfw.edu, or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155. Real men attend Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, www.ctsfw.edu, or 1-800-481-2155.
Our AM 850 KFUO Church of the Week is Trinity Lutheran Church in Hoffman, Illinois. For more than 130 years, Trinity has supported Christian education through its day school. A dedicated staff led by Mark Belli helps over 80 students grow in their God-given abilities and in their relationship with Jesus. The Parent Teacher League will sponsor a special dinner and auction on Sunday, February 13th to support the school. Worship with the members of Trinity Saturdays at 5:30 p.m. and Sundays at 8:30 a.m. Christian education for all ages follows the Sunday morning worship service.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll be talking with another Time magazine writer, Karen Tumulty. What does Bush owe the religious right? That's her article. And we'll be talking with her about it tomorrow on Issues Etc. Here are the questions I've laid out for you after our conversation with David Van Bima about the 25 most influential evangelicals in America. Did someone get left off the list, in your opinion, that belonged on this list of 25? And of all of these that have been listed, among them James Dobson and Rick Warren and Bill Hybels and Richard John Newhouse and many, many others, up to 25, of all these that are listed, I'm wondering, how would you rank them? Who would be first, the most influential evangelical in America? What do they all have in common? I want to get to that before we finish today's conversation. What do they all have in common? Who is left off? 5057850, 1-800-730-2727. Up next, Jason calls from his car. Jason, welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that I've been listening to you since September,
and
your show has been a blessing to me.
Thank you.
I agree with you on the Richard John Newhouse, and was wondering if Dr. John Piper is on there.
I don't think Piper was in there. Do you think he should be on the list?
I'm sorry?
Do you think he should be on the list?
I would say so in a lot of ways. I don't know all the circles of Christianity exactly, but I've seen a lot of the glory of God being something important and talked about a lot more recently. And I think a lot of that comes from Piper's theology going back to Jonathan Edwards.
All right, Jason, thank you for the call. Okay, so Jason thinks Piper should be on there. You know what struck me, too? There are no, except for Joyce Meyer and T.D. Jakes, I don't know why Paul Crouch is not on this list. I mean, Paul Crouch, not directly, but indirectly, probably has as much, if not more, influence than a lot of the people who made this list. Paul Crouch, owner of Trinity Broadcasting Network, along with his wife. He is the gatekeeper of the largest cable operation on the planet. And he is the entree for a lot of people to the word faith teaching. Now, his influence isn't good, in my opinion, but I wonder why he's not there. I am curious. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Lana calls. Lana, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. I was just hearing a program today on Fox News how, you know, they said that they see Billy Graham as the top evangelical in America and that they see Rick Warren as replacing him. And as I hear that list, you know, I would consider those not the top evangelicals of America or whatever. They're the top people that should be excommunicated from the Christian church. And it scares me that an evangelical is writing Bush's speech. I think I'd rather have Satan write it than an evangelical. Thanks.
All right, Lana, thank you very much. Well, we're a little premature on excommunication. Let's try correcting them first. Although you could argue that in the case of Rick Warren, there's been plenty of opportunity for correction there, especially since he's written his book. What was the other thing she said? Bush's speechwriter. Well, I mean, he's listed as an evangelical, but of course Van Bima is using this term a little bit loosely. Let me just share with you a little bit of what they say about Michael Gerson, who is they call him the chief scribe. He's in charge of what passes through the president's lips. And all presidents have these, so don't get upset. All of them have these. Presidents are sometimes made or broken by the quality and the wisdom of their speechwriters. That's my dream job, by the way. My dream job, writing speeches for presidents. Why not? Why not? No, come on, type it up. Why wouldn't it be, I have to write, I'd have to write conversationally? You know, it's my dream job if I got to pick the president, I guess. It would be my dream job. I mean, think about it. You got to write it so it sounds like the president is actually saying it and thinking it. Now, it says here, and this is very brief, so bear with me, about Michael Gerson, just to set Lana's heart at ease about what's going on there. For a White House speechwriter, coining flowery phrases for your boss is less important than accommodating his speaking style and deepest convictions. For Michael Gerson, 40, this guy is my age and he's in the White House. I have wasted my life. George W. Bush's chief scribe since 2000. Oh, boy, he's going to become a policy advisor in the West Wing. Not the show, the actual West Wing. Breaking code that meant knowing as much about the New Testament as about Bush's Texas roots. That proved easy. The former journalist shares Bush's devout Christian faith and his view of that the role of providence in human affairs should be reaffirmed in the public square. Though even some GOP supporters have criticized the president for his regular religious references, such lines are not likely to disappear from his speeches. Scrubbing public discourse of religious ideas, says Gerson, would remove one of the main sources of social justice in our history. And that's a reasonable statement there. It really is. We'll see. I admire those speechwriters. I really do. Now, Van Bima, when we were talking about Billy Graham, is Billy Graham's star on the wane? Is that what's happening? Is it descending? Because Billy Graham has been, and he will go down in history without a doubt, at least in the 20th century, as the most influential evangelical. When he dies, he will get Man of the Century or something like that. I don't know when they give those things out. But the differences between he and his son are to be noted. And Franklin, while he is heir apparent of the Crusade ministry, is not heir apparent to Billy Graham's legacy. That does appear to fall to someone like Rick Warren. Although, let's let these things be tested. Billy Graham was tested through time in his influence, decades. I would remind all those out there who are cheering on Rick Warren as the next Billy Graham, Rick Warren, his star has only been on the horizon for a short amount of time. And if it gives any one of you pause, I think he's actually younger than I am. I'm not sure about that. There's no doubt that his influence at the present day is considerable, for good or for ill. Eric calls from O'Fallon. Eric, welcome to Issues Etc.
Eric, welcome.
Hey, you can tally another vote for John Piper.
And why is that?
Oh, I think, well, on that list, he's probably a personal favorite of mine, and he's probably the only one who really maximizes the supremacy of God in all things. And I'd like to see that more in evangelicalism.
Eric, thank you for the call. Okay, what do they all have in common? Is there a common denominator among the 25 named in Time magazine? For those of you who do not have the benefit of seeing it or reading it right at this moment, I'm just going to very briefly name them all. And you tell me, I think there is a common denominator, but you tell me what the common denominator among all of these 25 most influential evangelicals, in no particular order, just in the order they're presented there in Time magazine, Rick Warren of Saddleback, Dr. James Dobson of Focus on the Family, Howard and Roberta Amundsen, they are some money people in evangelicalism. Diane Nippers, who is a regular guest on this program from the Institute on Religion and Democracy. Michael Gerson, I mentioned him before, the president's chief speechwriter. Richard John Newhouse, another guest on this program. He is, of course, the founder and editor of First Things. I would say he probably occupies the intellectual wing of evangelicalism more than anyone on this list. T.D. Jakes, Bishop T.D. Jakes, of Potter's House. Is that Potter's House? Yes, down in Texas. And, of course, from movies and books and everything else. Billy Graham and Franklin Graham, they're listed together. Joyce Meyer, our own Joyce Meyer, I should say, of Joyce Meyer Ministries. Rick Santorum, who is a senator, Roman Catholic, not an evangelical, but it's strictly speaking, but counted among them. Probably the strongest pro-life voice in the Senate, not only now, but maybe even ever. Luis Cortez, this is a Latin evangelical who has influence with the president and with the GOP as well, according to the story. Tim and Beverly LaHaye, the obvious Left Behind series, and Beverly LaHaye has her own thing going on the side, dealing with families and women. Charles Colson, Chuck Colson, for those of you more familiar with him, this book that he wrote, Born Again, about his post-Nixon conversion and his prison time, still has a very thriving ministry and a social commentary, even though he's 73. Can you believe he's 73? We're all getting older. There is Douglas Coe, that was mentioned by David Bambima, as one of these guys who's probably fascinating. Coe is, well, his theology is somewhat iffy in terms of its evangelicalism, but he does have the ability to kind of reach out from within evangelicalism to people of other religions. That's what David had to say. J.I. Packer, now there's someone we haven't talked about yet. This is, they call him the theological traffic cop. He has this book that probably put him on the map, and popularly at least put him on the map, Knowing God, in 1973. David Barton, who is, let's see who this is. I had not looked into who David Barton is, and I probably should know what his name means. He's got a book called The Myth of Separation, and he's been a co-chair for the Texas Republican Party for 8 years. Mark Knoll. Mark has been one of the biggest critics of evangelicalism from within evangelicalism. If you read anyone, Mike Horton, Oz Guinness, anyone who's critiquing evangelicalism theologically, they're all quoting Mark Knoll. Ralph Winter, who has a global ministry. It's called, I think it's called, what's it called again? Oh, now I forget. Okay, so Richard Land of Radio Blog Baptist Church fame. He gets a little picture. I think his influence is pretty strong, at least at this particular point. Stephen Strang. He's got a book called The Faith of George W. Bush. He's one of the president's favorite. The president is a common theme here, by the way. In this story, the president is a common theme. Strange. Okay, and he's with Charisma Magazine, that's what they say. And then Ted Haggard, he's the former president of the National Association of Evangelicals. Very outspoken, I believe. Stuart Epperson. Now here's one that I'm interested in reading about because he's actually a media guy. He is the president of Salem Communications.
they distribute quite a bit of satellite syndication. We help make him influential because we buy airtime on his radio stations. Let's see, we're almost to the end of the list. We've got Bill Hybels, obvious Willow Creek Association. Who else is in here? Brian McLaren. He's called the Paradigm Shifter, the Paradigm Shifter. He wrote a book in 2001 called A New Kind of Christian. And then Jay Sekulow of the ACLJ, the American Center for Law and Justice. That's the list. Now, that's not in any particular order because Time Magazine did not rank them. Who would you put as first in there? And my question for you, what's the common denominator of all these 25? Is anyone missing from the list? We've had a couple callers saying, yes, Piper's missing from the list, and someone else called with another suggestion. Anyone for you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I forgot John Stott. He gets a byline. John Stott gets a byline in their story from Van Bima. Gary calls from his car. Gary, welcome to Issues, etc.
Yes, Pastor. I was just wondering if Kel Thomas would fit in the list.
Oh, do you think he belongs there? He's not in the list, but do you think he belongs there?
Yes, I do. I enjoy his columns, and I'm going to miss them in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
Are they taking his column out?
That's the way I understood from the last, I believe, Sunday's paper, that they were rearranging some of the editorial people, and he was one that was being left out.
All right, thank you very much. I can tell you why he might not be on the list, and this is just my speculation. He wrote a book. I think it's probably almost 10 years ago now, called Blinded by Might. Do you remember the book? In which he took evangelicals and the religious right to task for becoming overly enamored with politics and believing that politics was the main mission of the church and cultural reformation was the main mission of the church. And at first, he was roundly dismissed and derided for his position there. He was going against the cultural orthodoxy of mainstream evangelicalism, but I would say he has been vindicated. He has been vindicated by many, not by all, but he's been vindicated by many coming his direction and realizing that he was right, that the religious right put all their eggs in the political basket for too long and forgot that they were the church. Ah, is that a hint to what might be a common denominator among all these 25? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Steve in West County, welcome to Issues, Etc.
You took my thunder. You got my point right now.
Oh, what's that?
Well, basically, my whole thing is, and I saw this on the internet, so I was kind of flipping through this, and with the exception of maybe Billy Graham and a few others, I kind of got the feeling these folks are more interested in building a Christian nation than building the church.
Okay, now that I think that does apply to some, but I don't think it applies to maybe most. Jay Sekulow probably would fall into that category. You could certainly say that I've heard Rick Santorum talk in Christian Nation terms. Richard Land, yes.
Yeah, but like, you know, I don't see like Rick Warren that much or some of the other. And I, in some respects, you know, kind of Dobson, sometimes I feel like he's going, instead of building up the church, building up the Christian nation sometimes.
Oh, definitely, Dobson. Absolutely.
Yeah, and,
there's no doubt
yeah,
about
and,
that.
And part of it is you know, when they view politics as the means of salvation for the nation as opposed to Christ, and things change politically, what happens next?
No, it's a very good question. What do we do next after the culture has been returned to Christ? Then what do we do?
Or what happens is if we're living, you know, how did the early church handle living in the Greco-Roman world? Wasn't exactly friendly to the Christian view of humanity.
Steve, thank you for your comments. Yes. All right. Now, that is a denominator of most, but not all. Richard John Neuhaus is no Christian Nation guy. There's definitely not. Rick Warren is as apolitical as you can get, although here's my, this is my little sidelight prediction. Watch for him to become more and more political as he is wooed more and more by the ruling classes in Washington, D.C. A guy who speaks and gives an invocation at the inaugural and then addresses some key and influential conservative senators is being wooed. Now, remember, this is one hand washes the other. He's being wooed because it's in the politician's best interest to have him on their side. Now, we'll just see whether or not he'll take the bait. Billy Graham, much to his shame, took the bait too much from U.S. presidents. And I think, lost the ability to speak truth to power in a credible way towards the end of his career. Because when you have lunch with the president too often, I'm taking my influence from the inside. Well, sometimes you have to speak from the outside, speaking truth to power. Bruce calls from his car. Bruce, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. Hi. I was just going to comment on the question that you had regarding what they all had in common. Would they all strongly lean towards Pelagianism?
Let me think that one through. Thank you very much, Bruce. I don't know. I could say probably without qualification that some of them do. The Roman Catholics might, to at least semi-Pelagianism. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the term, this idea that man's will is intact after the fall and that he can and must do something to reach God. So among the Roman Catholics there, and I think these are devout men, but among Richard John Neuhaus and Rick Santorum, theologically, they would be semi-Pelagian. There's no question about that. And, of course, Bill Hybels, there's no question there either. Even though he denies being in the Arminian decision theology streak, he is. Just read what he writes. He's unaware of the fact that he is, but he is. Rick Warren, I think, along the same lines. Although, look at someone like J.I. Packer. This is a guy who probably knows more about divine monergism and would deny the errors of decision theology as strongly as anybody else. So that's not what they all have in common. I think there's something that they all have in common. Do you know what it is? We've got a few more minutes left. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Some good tries, though. I mean, it's very good answers there. And of course, the callers don't have the benefit of seeing the whole list in front of them. A couple of women make this. Joyce Meyer gets a spot all by